The Off the Ball Podcast Network. The Rugby World Cup on OTB Sports Radio.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Sexton from outside the 10-meter line. It's spinning.
It looks good.
Le drop de Jonathan Sexton.
Rugby World Cup on Off the Ball. Updates, analysis, and opinion across all OTB channels from start to finish. This is OTB Sports Radio.
OTB Sports Radio.
All right, you're very welcome along to another Off the Ball World Cup show here. We're streaming right now on offtheball.com, on OTB Sports Radio, and across all of our social platforms at the moment. You can get your questions and comments into us as well. What do you make of the Irish side named to take on Russia on Thursday morning? 11 changes in total. We'll go through them in full shortly. We'll also have Alan Quinlan on the line to talk us through in more detail as well. And all of our rugby coverage here on Off the Ball, brought to you by Vodafone. Team of us, everyone in. Will O'Callaghan's joined me in studio this afternoon for the World Cup show. Will, how are you? Coming down to, back down to earth and coming to grips with the horror show of last weekend?
Yeah, last Saturday morning it kind of felt like a bad dream, the way things went, particularly the way the second half was, when Japan took complete control after half time. And we know the scenario now for Ireland. No less than 10 points is going to do. Ireland can get to a maximum of 16. Japan, you still have to keep as favourites to win the pool, given they can get to 19. And Scotland, after their bonus point victory, can now get to 15. So this pool is still reasonably wide open, relatively speaking, to some of the other pools. And Ireland know what they have to do, starting with Thursday's game against Russia, which, you know, when you look at that, much changed. Ireland 15, 11 changes in all. Perhaps no great surprise that Joe Schmidt has had to shuffle things around. Probably the two big talking points would be Gary Ringrose having to play three games in a row just due to the injury situation around him, and also the cover at scrum half, which could well be Joey Carberry.
Yeah, I'm going to point out, though, I pointed out in the office as well, why are we getting so down on ourselves? Japan beat South Africa in 2015. South Africa got to a semi-final.
Mm-hmm.
France lost to Tonga in 2011.
Yep.
They got to the final. Therefore, everything is going to be fine.
It's an unusual way of looking
at
it.
Proof that everything is going to be fine.
Look.
Okay, look, you know, there's
being mildly facetious, of course.
Yeah, tongue-in-cheek on that.
Teams, though, can ship a shock defeat and still turn it
but
around.
But it is just hard to see where Ireland turn it back and get back to a stage where, never mind getting to a final, like getting to a semi-final, being competitive in a quarter-final against either New Zealand or South Africa.
And now it looks far more likely that Ireland are going to play New Zealand if Japan were to, say, sweep up the points in the rest of the pool, though. I think Japan and Scotland is actually a fairly hard game.
Are we writing off Scotland's chances against Japan?
Not with the way they played yesterday. It was a very kind of unusual game as well, and the roof is going to be closed for Ireland. The amount of times that the ball hit the ground, I think that's purely because of how slippy it was. I know we all kind of joked about the oil on the balls, the training beforehand. That was obviously the preparation to try and get ready for this. So I think the 2003 Brian O'Driscoll gloves might get brought back out for this game on Thursday with the amount of times the ball was dropped. It's going to be very humid conditions as well.
I did see Andy Goode actually brought that up the other day on Twitter. As you pointed out, I was being mildly facetious. I think he kind of was as well. Andy Goode was one of those players where those grip gloves came into fashion in, like, just before the 2003 World Cup. Everyone had them for about a year or two. And slowly but surely, they all kind of went away. But Andy Goode stuck with them pretty much for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
He always had them. And, you know, he was kind of pointed out yesterday, why aren't people going back to these things? You know, I only ever wore them playing under 13s and 14s rugby. So in the grand scheme of things, I'm not really sure how effective they are.
I think I saw Alan Quinlan.
Alan Quinlan wore them
a few
times, We'll definitely ask him about that, actually. That's an interesting one. He definitely wore them. I remember the Irish team had green ones just for that World Cup in 2003 in Australia. But that's going to be interesting. And just the conditions in that arena on Thursday morning are going to be mad, because not only the Scotland and Samoa game the other morning, but you also had England-USA as well last week, which I was saying this previously as well. After that match, I was listening to, like, the podcast on the BBC and stuff, and their reporter Chris Jones was going on about, like, just the... He said he obviously he'd done games at the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff, where the roof is closed quite often, and players always talk about just how, like, thick the air and how heavy everything feels, and it feels like you're kind of moving through treacle. Even just being up in a commentary box, and you've been there as well in the last couple of years as well, but he was kind of saying that this was on another level entirely to anything he'd experienced at indoor stadiums. It was just so muggy just up in the commentary box. A commentary box which apparently was air conditioned. So he was trying to imagine what on earth was it like down on the pitch for those players. And we would have seen that in that England game as well. In the end, they steamrolled the USA. It was, you know, there wasn't any worry about the result or anything like that. But
you could see they were tired in the second half, though, and we saw that.
But it was more just the handling and stuff like that, and you know, Ireland tried to throw a few more offloads in that game against Japan. The game against Russia probably isn't going to be the game for offloads because they're uncertain at the best of times when you're in a game like that against...
And Joe Schmidt teams don't like to offload. And we heard this episode, they averaged four a game, I think, during the Six Nations this year. So generally, Ireland like to take the ball into contact, go to the ruck, get Murray to go in, ball off nine, as Warren Gatland has said multiple times about this Irish team as well. That's just the way they play. But the thing is, if you're going for tries, and Ireland will have to chase them a little bit over the next couple of games, particularly against Samoa. I think Russia are very poor, and Ireland should be able to get four tries against them without too much trouble. I hope they're not putting a jinx on them in that. But realistically, Ireland are going to have to be precise with the ball. That's really the key.
Yeah. We'll just run you through the team news, actually, because Joe Schmidt named his starting 15 early this morning to face Russia on Thursday, and it includes Johnny Sexton, who captains the team, captaining Ireland for the first time ever from the start of a test match. He has filled in midway through games before. You can see it up on your screen there in front of you, but he missed the defeat to Japan with a quad muscle injury, but he is back and fit, and it seems like a statement almost to put Johnny Sexton out there and as the captain for this game against Russia. 11 changes in total, though, from the side that were beaten by Japan. Number 8, Jordy Murphy, is drafted straight into the squad, having flown out to replace Jack Conan. And there's Dave Kilcoyne, Niall Scanlon, John Ryan, a monster front five, Jean Klein and Tadhg Byrne in behind them. Chris Farrell obviously ruled out with concussion, and Robbie Henshaw yet to come in. So Gary Ringrose continues in the centre for the third game in a row, and Bundy Aki comes in, and the other two players to keep their places. Peter O'Mahony obviously in the back row as well, while out in the back line, Keith Earls and Rob Kearney stay in the team. We're going to bring in Alan Quinlan in just a couple of moments time, but first we're going to hear from Johnny Sexton, who, as I said, is captaining Ireland for the very first time from the start of a test match. And here he is this morning talking about how much of an honour it is.
It's a massive honour. I spoke to Joe this morning, so I only found out myself over the last few hours. I haven't even had a chance to tell my family or anything, but I'm sure they're going to be very proud as well. It's something that I've thought about since I was a kid, and something that I've made a lot of decisions around trying to get there one day, and it's taken a while, but it was worth the wait, and I feel incredibly proud. But I want to be captain there of the good performance and a good win in a World Cup game, so that's my main focus. I don't think anything changes really for me. I take a big responsibility in the team anyway, so nothing's changed.
Yeah, that's Johnny Sexton speaking about captaining Ireland. Alan Quinlan has joined us on the line now from Japan. Quinny, I'm going to talk about Johnny Sexton in just a moment. But first of all, if in doubt, a Munster front five, that's the way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think I can't remember the last time there was a Munster front five. I think it's probably 7-8 years ago, is it? Marcus Horne, Gerry Flannery, John Hayes, Dunica and Paul. That's probably the last Munster front five I can remember, unless you can tell me different, can you?
There could have been in some summer tours matches or games like that where they were, you know, it hasn't been a first choice team anyway, as I will say, over the last 10 years or so. But just to move on, like Johnny Sexton, we heard from there, captaining Ireland for the first time. Does it feel like a statement kind of putting him out there and putting him as captain, putting him front and centre, having missed the game at the weekend, when you consider Peter O'Mahony for the last couple of years has been the stand-in guy? And when Peter O'Mahony hasn't been around, as well as Rory Best, someone like Rhys Ruddock has been given the captaincy. And, you know, O'Mahony and Ruddock are both playing this weekend, but Johnny Sexton leading the team out this weekend. Does it just kind of feel like Joe Schmidt is trying to make a bit of a statement with this?
Yeah, it does. And, he was put out for the press at the start of the week as well. So I think in times of crisis and difficulty, you need people, you need your big leader to step up. And I can imagine from Johnny Sexton's point of view, he's and I saw him after the game on Saturday. He looked frustrated. He looked kind of frustrated more so than he wasn't playing himself and part of it. And he did speak about a responsibility and trying to get back and help the team. And maybe from some of the stuff he said on Monday, Joe thought, right, maybe he's the one to give the captaincy. Because as you said, particularly, I think it was Australia last summer when Rory Best wasn't there, Peter O'Mahony was the captain for the series win in Australia. So there's been a lot of talk about him being missing in that game last Saturday. And we know his quality, and not just his ability to play well, but his leadership quality and experience as well. So it's probably a good idea just to give him a boost personally. He said, you can hear him saying there how much it means to him. If Ireland are going to get their World Cup back on track, look, expecting to beat Russia and Samoa and hope there's a bigger picture of a quarterfinal at this stage. Someone like Johnny Sexton in good spirits and good form and getting a couple of matches under his belt. You imagine if Ireland are going to do anything and have a chance of winning a quarterfinal, it will be with Johnny Sexton playing really well. And I think giving him the captaincy is certainly a really nice moment for him.
Alan, Will here. I'd imagine picking Sexton as well, Ireland be hoping to get an element of control this coming weekend as well, which probably wasn't there at the weekend against Japan, particularly in that second half when Ireland kicked the ball away an awful lot and into probably bad positions on the pitch as well. You would think had Sexton been on the pitch, they would have probably played that differently.
Yeah, it's a tough one, Will, because I think his temperament and his experience would certainly have helped, because I think, having watched the game back a couple of times, I think there was times where the ball should have been kicked and territorially we should have tried to squeeze them a little bit more. Uncharacteristically, you know, there was turnovers, there was mistakes, there was a little bit of a lack of urgency about protecting the ball. So, and there was a lot of slow ball they had to play off. So it's very difficult for any halfbacks, whether it be Johnny Sexton, Conor Murray, who 2018 were probably the best halfback partnership in the world. It's very difficult for anybody to deal with that. I think Beauden Barrett playing at 10 and Aaron Smith for the All Blacks would struggle if their pack was under pressure and the ball is slow. So it's not a case of if Johnny Sexton was there, Ireland would have won the game. But I do think that if Johnny Sexton was there, Ireland would have put themselves in better positions to win the game. And he speaks a lot. Sometimes he's spiky in what he says, and his body language is kind of agitated, shall we say, when he's talking to other guys. But he gets people going. Ronan O'Gara was the same. He would tell his forward pack if they weren't doing the business and weren't giving him proper ball. And you just get the feeling that if he was there on Saturday, it would have helped with that control and that territorial stuff. And but it's difficult, I think. The Irish forwards made it difficult for their halfbacks on Saturday, and Japan made it even more difficult with the way they defended and the energy they had. So I think having him back is a boost and it's a statement, and they just got to get some bit of flow going now against Russia and try and rebuild themselves. And it's psychological setback, and it's exactly what you want if you're under pressure for your leaders to put their hand up and say, well, I want to play this game. I want to lead the team, and hopefully Sexton can do that.
Are there any players in that starting 15? We'll get your overall thoughts on it kind of in just a moment or two. But any players in that who you think kind of do actually need a bit of a big game? I'm talking maybe some of the guys that would be closer towards like first team selection or even on the bench. Maybe Tadhg Byrne didn't have the impact that he would have liked off the bench the last day, or even Peter O'Mahony, Keith Earls, Rob Kearney. Any of those guys that you think probably just need a big game to make sure that they are there in a starting lineup if Ireland are in a quarter final?
I think Rob Kearney and Keith Earls do. They've fantastic experience, and again, it's difficult if you're in the backs if you're not getting ball. And we know how dangerous Keith Earls can be. He's going to win his 80th cap. He's been a bit unlucky with the injuries that he's had coming into the World Cup. He's an incredible player. You think if you're Keith Earls, just you're going to say to the people inside you, give me the ball, I want to run, I want to score tries. And no matter how much experience you have, it's like a striker in soccer, isn't it? Scoring goals, it just changes the whole picture, and it can really kick on a player's confidence from there. So I think he would certainly look for confidence, a confidence builder. Because Larmour and Conway played really well against Scotland, I think, you know, there is a bit of vulnerability in that back three, and I think they will have to play well on Saturday or on Thursday to try and enhance themselves. I think up front, Peter O'Mahony needs a big game. He didn't last long against Scotland. He was probably didn't get enough of make enough of an impact against Japan. He'll know that himself. And you think Peter Romani getting 80 minutes here would be beneficial for the team going forward, and he has to make an impact. I think someone like Niall Scannell as well could put his hand up to try and put a bit of pressure on Rory Best, given, you know, after the Scottish game, I think Rory Best got a lot of credit and he deserved it. And there's some criticism after the Japan game, and he probably deserves that as well. So there's a couple of question marks there. And someone like Tadhg Byrne could be an option in the back row as well going forward for a Samoa game or a potential quarterfinal. So Reece Ruddock, if he has a big game, you know, he could put his hand up and say, well, you know, I want to play against Samoa. And he could have a say in the selection. So I think there's a lot of people, if you stand out, look, it's a game that we have to be very careful where we say this, but Ireland should win this comfortably. But if you're in the Russian camp, you're thinking, Ireland are unsettled now. There'll be nerves. Let's get in amongst them. Let's be physical, which Russia will be. Force mistakes and make it really difficult for them. And if that happens, then how do Ireland cope with that? And that's what I'm really looking for, is who's going to bring that composure and control and maybe take the bull by the horn, something they didn't do last Saturday. Because I think you'll definitely see a Russian team that'll come out and they'll try and tear into Ireland, and they'll have a real go off them. And a good friend of mine, former colleague with Shannon Munster in Ireland, Mark McDermott, is their forwards coach. And I spent a little bit of time with him last week, and he was nervous about Russia's participation here, because you know, he didn't want him to he spoke to me about how hard they'd worked and how honest they are. And you know, when you get walloped, then it's very difficult. It becomes very disappointing. But there's a lot of positive signs, particularly up front in their first two games. And they'll certainly target Ireland up front on tomorrow as well. So it'll be an interesting one. But this team has to kind of bring out, show a load of energy, have a real cut, and try and rebuild themselves and get a bit of a feel-good factor. It's amazing. Scotland are staying the same hotel as me here in Kobe, and they're walking around as if nothing happened against Ireland, because they got back out there and they put in a really, really good performance and kind of fulfilled their potential last night. So Ireland's potential against Russia is what? 30-point win, 40-point win. I think if they don't get anything like that, it'll be disappointing and there'll be a few more questions to be asked.
Alan, were you surprised there's no Jordan Larmour in the team this week? Because he played very well at 15 in the first game against Scotland, and, you know, realistically, he can come in quite easily on the wing, add that kind of energy you're talking about as well. Were you surprised he wasn't in the starting 15 today?
Yeah, I was. And I think Rob Kearney had a HIA, and he came off at the weekend. So, you know, he's obviously recovered. He passed the protocols for that. So I was surprised that he's not there. But, you know, I had a chat today, Will, with Hugo Monya, and I have spoke to Scott Hastings, and I've spoke to Shane Williams, different guys after the weekend who were here with ITV, and I'm trying to say to him, like, are we good team, bad team, or are we just not playing well? Are we restricted? And the consensus is that there's actually really top-class players in this Irish side, and they just have to express themselves more. And someone like Jordan Larmour, you kind of think he doesn't have that kind of restrictive kind of approach. He plays with great excitement and natural flair and skill. But then if you go into a quarterfinal, well, who are you going to pick at full-back? Against New Zealand or the All Blacks or South Africa, and it's probably going to be Rob Kearney. And, you know, he missed the Scottish game, so he hasn't had, you know, he hasn't had to overextend himself with multiple games. Gary Ringrose is the one that's going to be involved for the three, which is again something that, you know, they're a bit restricted in the centres. But I was a little bit surprised by that. But, you know, you sit in the bench here, I think he'll be on pretty quickly in the game, and he'll get a half a match probably at least anyway.
Is it much of a worry now? You mentioned Gary Ringrose starting for a third game in a row there. Like, we're three games into a World Cup and we're still carrying Robbie Henshaw, who hasn't played a single minute. And it's meant that someone like Gary Ringos has had to be out there three times in the space of, what, 11 days or so. Like, it's,
days,
yeah, it's like, it's certainly not ideal having that in tournament rugby when the games are coming thick and fast. And if we get to a stage where Robbie Henshaw maybe is only able to get a, you know, a run out off the bench maybe against Samoa, if that's the level of his fitness, where, you know, you might potentially be going into a World Cup with one of your key players like that, having really not played too much rugby at all in the previous 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's not ideal. And I think it's probably, there's two centres unavailable this week in Chris Farland and Robbie Henshaw. So I think the thinking behind it maybe to certainly not playing for the full game. You could move Keith Earls into the centre. You can bring Larmour into the centre. And I think, I doubt it very much if Gary Ringrose will be involved at all against Samoa next week. I think he probably will need a break. But it's down to the fitness guys as well, and the mentality, the player and the freshness. And Gary Ringrose was probably one of the few players, or he was one of only a couple who looked to have played well on Saturday. And so I think they'll be very mindful of that. And Joe Schmidt spoke about that. So I would imagine as quickly as they can, he'll be taken off the field and protected. And Larmour will probably go into 13. So it's kind of going back to Will's question. Larmour and Ringrose will probably get half a game each. And so it's Robbie Henshaw is the one for me that's, you know, you've carried a guy for a couple of weeks that can't be involved in the first three games. He's such a good player and he can offer so much to this side that the risk is probably worth taking. If Chris Farrell was available this week, it probably wouldn't be a case of he could probably share that workload with Gary Ringrose. But certainly Henshaw, I think for me, hopefully, I really hope they can get him out and start him against Samoa next week.
And then also as well, Ireland have kind of put themselves in a bind now with this Japan defeat, because regardless of what happens against Russia and Samoa, if Ireland go out and absolutely shoot the lights out against the two of them and run in 10 tries in each game, they'll still be going into a quarterfinal with everyone going, you know what, that game against Japan is still hanging over them. You'll be looking back saying they were expected to walk past Samoa and to walk past Russia, and there is still going to be those doubts. Like, regardless of what happens now, those doubts are going to be there for the next few weeks, whether or not it's South Africa or New Zealand in a quarterfinal.
Yeah, and look, you've got to deal with that. It's sport is tricky, and I've been in that situation before where I've been in dressing rooms where there has been doubt, there's been people questioning you, and the evidence is there to back up that doubt. And you've two kind of choices there. You can either sink or swim. So I think they've got to swim, and I do believe that there is the potential to produce something in the quarterfinal if they get there. And that's always been the case ever before the start of the tournament. The problem they have now, Neil, is they're, you know, if we go out in a quarterfinal and go out without playing well or have been close or giving it a real crack, I think even if we gave it a real crack and we're very close, and it was that Japan defeat is probably still going to hang over the team when they come home. So there's massive pressure on them, and the pressure has probably ramped up a bit with the loss. But ultimately, you know, being in a quarterfinal is still, being beyond the quarterfinal is something we've never done. So that was always going to be expectation pressure there, and they've got to try and produce something when they get that to that stage, eradicate that doubt. But certainly, everyone on the outside will, be talking about that and probably not giving them a chance to get through. So they'll have less pressure, and in a sense, they'll have one shot at it, and that might help them a little bit, where there's not going to be that pressure. In 2015, 2011, there was an expectation, and they were probably slight favourites to go through against Wales and Argentina, and it didn't happen. So they're certainly not going to be favourites if they get to the quarterfinal this time.
Alan, is this like almost the ideal fixture, though, given that this is the quickest turnaround between games, given that they are playing the weakest team in the pool now as well? Like, really, if you want a game to bounce back in against Russia, is what you would have wanted, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Look, it's certainly it's certainly the best game to have when you have that disappointment of the loss. And it, I think the short turnaround is more of the problem. I wouldn't mind having Samoa on Saturday and having to play the full side again. Maybe that could be the best case scenario if you put everyone that played last Saturday, put them back out there again and say atone for your mistakes and fix things. But with the short turnaround, I think it is the best possible game. And look, everyone bar Robbie Henshaw have played after Thursday, so that kind of does help as well that everyone in the squad will have had involvement in the World Cup, and that's probably an important part of sticking together and having that bit of team morale and all that stuff. But they look like the spirits have been pretty good this week, and they've been trying to put on a brave face anyway.
And Quinny, just one final question. I know you have to go in a couple of minutes, but we were talking about, you know, the conditions in the Kobe Arena on Thursday, and we would have seen it yesterday with Scotland and Samoa, the indoor stadium and just how greasy and slippy that ball is, and same with England and USA last week. And we were talking about the grip gloves that kind of came into fashion around the 2003 World Cup. You were one of those players that wore them for quite a few years. Do they work?
Yeah, they do work, yeah. And I saw Andy Goode tweeted about it.
Yeah, that's exactly what we were saying, yeah.
They do work. And there's been, like, I think Scotland turned the ball over 20 times last night. England, there was 40 turnovers last week in their game. I think it's in the same stadium. The roof is going to be closed. It is going to be a complete sweat box, like a sauna. So there's going to be mistakes. There's going to be knock-ons and turnovers and loose balls. And they just got to deal with that. And we didn't really probably deal with the conditions and manage the game the last day. And you'd certainly rather make mistakes in their half rather than in your own half. And because you don't get punished as much. So Ireland have got to cope with that and deal with that in the next with this game tomorrow. But I think the most important thing, look, it's, you're not going to get a perfect performance. There's no way this team are going to go out and everything's going to click. There's going to be moments in the game where they're under a bit of pressure, or there is mistakes or errors, but they've just got to build pressure throughout the game and not try and win it in the first 10 minutes, because, you know, if Russia get a loose ball or a big hit or something, it'll give them a boost and it'll just create more doubt with Ireland. I think they've got to be pragmatic early on. You know, show Russia the respect, because they are a very, very physical side, and then work their way through the game and hopefully build a score in the second half.
All right, Quinny, great to speak to you, and we'll catch up again soon. Enjoy the match on Thursday.
Cheers, lads. Thanks.
Yeah, Alan Quinlan there speaking to us. I'm just going to run through a couple of text messages here, and we'll play out a little bit more of our press conference audio from this morning as well. But the key point to take out of that, the grip gloves work.
Yep, they're
bring
going
them back
into vogue.
Bring them back.
14 years later, here they are again.
Yeah, so El Kigarino on YouTube says, it was unfair to expect Joey to come on and win the game. He's not fully fit. He's benched again this week for that reason. Sexton wouldn't have been able to move the ball around with a tired team. That's, I think Quinny was kind of getting at that message as well.
I think Carberry would have played if Ireland had beaten
him. It kind of doesn't really matter who was at out half and in the second half of that game on Saturday, when the forwards were just being bullied like they were and the ball coming back was so dirty. Big Will, did you send this in while Quinny was talking? The game against Russia will give them false hope. If they flog them by 50-odd points, it won't give you a good gauge if they've improved from the Japan defeat. And I suppose that probably is along the lines of what we were saying, that regardless of what happens in this game,
in the next two games,
that if they get to a quarter final, you're not going to be looking back at how well they've played possibly over a two-game period. You're going to be looking back going, that Japan game.
That
it's going to stick in the craw
Japan,
for a couple of weeks' time. Another one from El Kigarino, who's tuning in. He's sending in a few messages. Yeah. He's got another one after this. We don't win anything by hammering Russia. No player will play themselves into the squad with a big game on Thursday, but we have to win one game at a time. And he also says, lads, Conan was injured getting on the plane, as was Henshaw. What are we doing? Is it centralised contracts that means they must be on the plane? We can't afford to be bringing injured players to Japan.
I'd assume with Henshaw, Neil, the reason that the coaching team persisted was because Henshaw is in the two best centre pairings that Ireland could potentially play, which is him and Aki, or him and Ringrose. So I guess their thought was, okay, if he runs this hamstring injury off, maybe it's not serious as it first seemed, we then have options when it comes around to the last game and into the quarterfinal, because you probably pick Henshaw in your best 15. The problem is the recovery has been slower than first expected.
Yeah, and on Jack Conan as well, the man who's coming in for him and starting at number 8 this Thursday, jettisoned straight into the team after getting off the plane on Sunday, is Jordy Murphy. So he's going straight into action starting at number 8. He's only been around the camp a couple of days, but obviously had been training with the squad for most of the summer, so he's really only been away from them for a few weeks now at this stage. But Joe Schmidt says he has no doubts that the Ulster back row will make an instant impact this week.
Trained unbelievably well today. He is straight off the flight. He got in late Sunday, so he's at least had a couple of nights. He was feeling good yesterday. One of the things, I suppose, it's a 7:45 game, so that's around about midday in Irish terms, so he doesn't have to recalibrate himself too much to get out and play a game, hopefully, and then we'll give him the weekend off after that. So we're just asking for him to kind of do the best he can for us. And the one thing with Geordie is that you seldom get anything other than that. I think he's a really good, he's a good performer for us, and we'd have a lot of confidence about him being able to slot straight in.
It's mad, the turnaround, really, when you think about it, how Friday afternoon Jordy Murphy is clued into his head, you know, as a professional sports person. The only thing probably on his mind is, okay, the Ospreys at Kingspan Stadium here, opening game of the Pro 14, tuned in for this. And then he probably gets the tap on his shoulder saying, you know what, you're not going to be playing. I wonder, did he have a little bit of a waiting period? Because it wasn't, he wasn't officially confirmed as the replacement until... Sunday morning. Yeah. It was Saturday afternoon. They just confirmed that Jack Conan was out of the tournament. But they waited until the Sunday to actually kind of confirm who it is going to be. I'd imagine they were probably waiting to see with the Japan game, were there going to be any other injuries in that? Mm. And was that going to alter their kind of choice of who was coming in? You know, maybe if there was another injury to maybe a second row or something, they might bring Devin Toner and someone else in and alter things accordingly like that. But, you know, just so quickly you're thrown into the action, it's going to be a huge game for him this weekend. And as Joe Schmidt says, he'll be given a couple of days off afterwards. Look, I'd say most of the Irish team will probably be given a couple of days off afterwards, because they have a much longer break before the final game of the pools against Samoa. It's the way they kind of fall. Everyone is kind of getting one of those short little turnarounds. But I think what has been pointed out by some of the Tier 2 nations is that any time the New Zealand, Ireland, the big countries like that, any time they are having to deal with the short turnaround, they're playing a Tier 2 or Tier 3 nation.
I noticed that by the calendar. There was a lot of kind of the top teams playing each other on the first two weekends. Then you had the quick turnaround was going into the bottom teams in your pool. And then generally the top, very top teams in each pool finish off with an easier game at the very end as well. Funny how the fixture calendar managed to throw it up that way, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, at the last World Cup as well, Ireland got knocked out in a quarter final and had all those injuries in the game against France. And Ireland in the last World Cup had the most forgiving calendar out of any team. They started on a Saturday afternoon. Mm. Their next game was 8 days later.
They had a week between every game, didn't
they? Yeah, so they had 8 days, 7 days, 7 days, 7 days, 7 days. They did not have a break shorter than 7 days, so, you know,
much less travel than they have for this World
exactly,
Cup.
Exactly,
as well.
Yeah, as well. Also, we're going to hear from Joe Schmidt now. He's continued to talk about the penalty count from the weekend, Ireland conceding 9 penalties in total, and 7 of those in the first half. Discipline was absolutely an issue. Now, he has pointed out today that World Rugby have clarified that I think 3 of the penalties that they did concede probably shouldn't have been given. And they were...
It was a bizarre refereeing performance. It was like it was being refed differently for both teams at different times. That's not to take away from Ireland's defeat.
Yeah, and like, I don't know, my thoughts on it is constantly bringing it up the week of the match. Now, I think what he's trying to do here as well, he pointed out that it was the assistant referee, Jerome Garces, who made those 3 calls to the referee, which ended up being the incorrect ones, as World Rugby clarified. And Jerome Garces just happens to be refereeing this game on Thursday. So... just, I think, like Japan tried to do last week, putting the seed of doubt in Angus Gardner's mind about refereeing decisions and how Ireland were illegal at the scrum. But, you know, it's obviously something they're trying to. But we can have a listen here. What do you have to say about that?
Joe, having had a couple of days to look back on the tape from the weekend, what have you now learned from the analysis of what happened against Japan?
Yeah, I think I mentioned earlier, we certainly learned that we're capable. And in that first 20 minutes, to be 12-3 up I think we demonstrated that. We did put ourselves on the back foot and partly went on to the back foot. I think we were penalised for offside 4 times. We've now got the feedback that 3 of those were incorrect calls, you know, and people are asking us about our discipline. It's pretty hard to keep getting off the line and being on the front foot when you know, when you are getting those calls, and 2 of them were from an AR who's going to be refereeing us on Thursday. So we know we're going to have to be on our best behaviour. And one thing I would say about this team is it's something they go out and they try to deliver. And generally speaking, it's unusual for us to have a higher penalty count than our opponents. And so it's frustrating that in these first 2 games, you know, I thought Wayne did a super job. I know talking to Gregor that they were happy with the way Wayne went in the first game as well. So, you know, that's our fault if we're on the wrong side of the penalty count there. But I do think that we've got to try to look after that as best we can. We've got to make sure that we don't become passive in a game against an opposition who are playing in front of their home crowd. And you'd have to be really impressed with the way that they got themselves back into the game. And, you know, if it wasn't us that lost to them, I'd say, wow, that's fantastic for the tournament, isn't it?
On the refereeing thing, I have to think that you had to expect Angus Gardner was going to be especially strict about offside lines at
there
the
was
weekend.
A week of
he refereed, yeah, he refereed the France and Argentina game, where that was the main issue, and that was the game that everyone was talking about how much of a mess the offside lines were. We all knew for 6-7 days that Angus Gardner was going to be refereeing Ireland next game up, and
there's 2 things he was going to watch.
He was obviously going to be super vigilant about the offside lines, mm-hmm. to the point where it's probably no harm staying an extra couple of inches back just to make certain of it. He was always going to be strict on.
That's what frustrated me about Tadhg Byrne as well, is that Ireland had given away so many penalties in the first half, and then he gave away 2 very quick succession after he came on. You'd imagine you're on the sideline watching the game, you're thinking, he's been particularly tight on this, I can't do anything silly, and then we gave away 2 very silly penalties from him moments after he came on.
So yeah, we'll have to see just how's that message got through to Jerome Garcés for Thursday, and we'll see how it goes. A couple of bits of just news to bring you up to date with before we finish up. The Russia team was named this morning as well, and Vasily Artemev, who is the name that will be most familiar to Ireland fans, their captain, and one of our guests as well early in the summer on Land of the Rising Scrum. He's one of 6 players who are starting for the 3rd time for Russia at this World Cup, along with Kirill Gotsasev, Bogdan Fedokto, Tagir Godziev, German, Davidov,
decent
and Kirill Galinitsky also retained. The rest of the team rotated, though. Ramil Gaisan coming in at out half in place of their all-time leading point scorer, Yuri Kushnarev. Also, the All Blacks, interesting story this morning.
Goggles?
Yeah. Artie Savia, All Blacks back row, he's going to wear those special goggles made famous by Ian McKinley in the next World Cup game against Canada tomorrow. And I presume as well for the foreseeable future after he trialled them out in training this week. He discovered in the last year or two that he's the vision in his left eye is deteriorating, and he's making the effort to protect his eyesight. I think he pointed out it's more actually to protect the eyesight in his good eye, in his right eye.
I would imagine so, yeah.
Because if something happens to that eye, all of a sudden
you've got 2 bad eyes.
Yeah, you've got 2 bad eyes. You're in a lot of trouble. But I don't know. I think part of me just think it is nice to see that, you know, something that a guy like Ian McKinley, he was the pioneer for. He strived to make this thing, to make the trials approved worldwide. And it was a huge fight for him. I think it was 4 years ago when he was trying to really force this home at World Rugby, that there were some countries, particularly in Ireland, where he couldn't get signed by Zebra or Treviso. They were trying to at the time. He couldn't sign for them because they knew that he was only going to be able to play in a certain number of games each year and wasn't going to be able to go to Ireland or go to other countries as well. So
pioneer is a good word as well, Neil, because I remember there was a young kid in Laois playing, I think, under 12s for Port Arlington.
Yes.
Who he helped to campaign for as well because he needed to wear the goggles as well. So, yeah, McKinley has taken this on as a very kind of a personal journey to try and make sure that those rules were changed and that other players could benefit from it as well.
Now, obviously, you don't want to have to see players wearing the goggles, but it is nice to know that, you know, something.
For those that need them.
Yeah, so for those that need them, that something has been done, and it's an Irish player who's been at the forefront of it. And also as well, a World Cup injury blow for the Springboks, because Jesse Creel's been ruled out of the World Cup. He picked up a hamstring injury in the opening game of the tournament against New Zealand, and his condition hasn't improved enough, so he's going to be ruled out for the rest of it. Damian Williams has been called up. The Stormers winger has been on loan very briefly at Saracens for just a few weeks now, but that is going to be coming to an end fairly soon, because he's joining up with the squad. The 21-year-old has 5 caps, won all of those in 2018. And just before we finish up as well, a few more games coming up over the next few days. Where are we going to see a shock, if any? You have them up on your screen there. So tomorrow morning from 8:45, France against the USA. You'd be expecting France to win that one, but you never know with France. New Zealand and Canada, you'd have to really fear for Canada based on their performance last week against Italy, and based on the way New Zealand started against South Africa, and the fact that New Zealand are coming to the end of a 9-day break.
Yeah, they're going to bash them, absolutely bash them.
Now, the only thing for New Zealand, they have a four-day lead into their next game, but it is against Namibia as well.
Didn't those fixtures fall very nicely for
them?
They
did, yeah. If you are going to have a short turnaround, you may as well have them there. Georgia and Fiji, Thursday morning. I am looking forward to that one very much. 6:15 Irish time on Thursday morning. This is a clash of two very, very different styles.
Different rugby philosophies, yeah. Georgia obviously going to try and just bash with their forwards and try and maybe keep the ball in tight conditions, and Fiji want to throw it around their backs. I thought Georgia were quite impressive on weekend one. They put in a really good shift, so Georgia could take Fiji in that one.
Yeah, the only concern I'd have for Georgia is their defence off first phase of like scrums and lineouts, when Wales absolutely just walked through them on several occasions. So that is going to be a big concern, because you know a devastating Fiji are with the ball in hand. And I think to add to that as well, not only is it a clash of two great styles, there's also something definitely on the line in this, because now that Fiji have slipped up against Uruguay, the window is now open for Georgia, because they know if they can get a win against Fiji, they are more than likely going to finish third in that pool. Yep. And that means automatic qualification for the next Rugby World Cup. And that is a huge thing for them. I spoke to their head coach earlier in the summer, Milton Haig, and he was saying the fact that they finished third in their pool at the last World Cup, it just gave them so much more scope to try out new things, rather than having this kind of having this millstone around them where they have to just make sure of qualification for the World Cup first off, and then worry about what they're going to do long term, that they can actually plan for the long term. So that's going to be a really interesting game as well. And then all that leading up into Ireland and Russia at 11:15 on Thursday morning, before South Africa and Italy on Friday. So our next Rugby World Cup show is going to be coming up this Thursday, straight after the Ireland-Russia game. So we're talking about 1 o'clock, just after 1 o'clock Irish time on Thursday morning, when hopefully we're looking back on a bit better performance from the Irish. We'll see you then.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.